Putting the Ain't in Saint, you're listening to Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show. And now here's your host, Drew Marshall.
Folks, you're listening to the Drew Marshall Show, and we're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. We're live right here in Southern Ontario on Joy 1250. Our co-host, Howard Glassman, otherwise known as Humble from the Humble and Fred Show, just went to the kitchen. So, Humble is actually a friend, and I like the fact that he's a friend because I like friends.
You do.
See how deep I got
there? I barely
got
in the door on that.
But I like it because he's not part of the, he's more skeptical than I am about the God stuff. He's not on the God squad. He's not a Christian. He's not a believer. But he's inquisitive. Now, he's cheeky, and he just crosses that line, Nina, because he does the satellite radio.
Getting your old guy voice again.
You can find him on the Google. We're moving along into our next segment on the show, Susanna Hicks Eldridge. Susanna, by the way, I want to get you on the phone right away here instead of reading your bio.
Sure.
Do we have to say Hicks? Because it's in brackets.
No, you don't really. It's just some of my writing is under my maiden name, and I got married like less than a year ago, and Eldridge just sounds so much better.
So you got,
I don't want people to not be able to recognize.
We just got off the phone with Angela Hoover. Do you know who that is?
I believe she's a friend of Carrie.
Everybody on this stinking show today is a friend of Carrie's.
Well, thank you, Carrie. We love you.
So, Susanna, you and I were chatting the other day about you just sort of joining something that's coming up next, which is a bit of a roundtable discussion with three comedy chicks. Hey, is that a bad word? Can we say, Megs, I'm looking at you. You're the 20-something-year-old politically correct girl. I can't say chicks, right?
No.
Okay.
I'm 30-something. Thank you for saying that.
No. I meant, I know you're old, but what I was talking about was, never mind. So we were chatting the other day, and then all of a sudden you started sharing your story. I thought, good night. That's a story in and of itself, so we're gonna book you on as an entire segment.
Man, cool.
But you got a weird story. I'm sorry. Let's just give kudos to your mom, first of all, for enduring, doing the single mom thing. So,
totally.
Where do we begin in this Jerry Springer meets Jesus story that you have?
Sure. We can start kind of from the beginning.
Well, that's an idea.
My mom was, she was living in Southern California, good little Christian girl, very, very sweet and kind of naive, although she had a master's in early child development, but was very young. She used to always tell me that what I knew about men at 14, she learned at like 28.
Ooh.
That
might actually say something more about you than her.
Well, I'm sure it does. Which is also a story in itself.
Yes.
Daddy issues.
Yep.
But so she, met my father. She was singing in the choir at a church, one of the mega churches in Southern California.
Can it be named, or is that illegal?
I don't think it. Illegal.
Okay.
It was Evie Free Fullerton.
Evie Free Fullerton. That's Chuck's church, isn't it? Chuck Swindoll?
I think he was there at that time.
Charles, yep.
And so she met my biological father in the choir, and he was quite a bit older and
How much older?
Over a decade.
Okay.
A little over a decade.
Okay, that's okay.
And so one thing led to another. And I ended up being conceived.
Isn't this where we say yada, yada, yada?
Yep, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. And so I was conceived. And then when she told him that she was pregnant, he very much just kind of chose not to parent and just basically said, if you have this baby, I don't want anything to do with her or you, point blank. And he was... he was a men's leader at the church, I believe, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, really considered, or at least proclaimed, having this strong Christian faith. And then chose not to parent. So, interestingly enough, the church, and I think the church does this a lot, didn't handle it very well.
Was there a bit of carpet sweeping?
Well, you know, my mom was no longer able to sing in the choir. She was no longer able to be a soloist. Not that she even wanted to. It was embarrassing enough for her to be pregnant and single. It's a hard spot to be in general.
Yeah.
And so she ended up leaving the church. And I think what is so sad about it is, what was so sad is, this was a huge church. And a lot of people could have come and supported her and offered her grace and all these other things that as Christians you really should be doing, and they didn't. And I think that happened a lot. I don't know what happened to him exactly, but I know for her, they wanted to have meetings with her, and they did have meetings with her. And I remember when she tells the story, I remember her telling me that someone had called her on the phone at another time and wanted her to go to another meeting with the pastors. I don't think Chuck was involved in this. And my mom just didn't want to go to this meeting. And she said, you know what? This was a mistake, not my lifestyle. And I thought, man, that was so gutsy for a 20-something-year-old woman who's in this really uncomfortable and painful situation to be able to say that to a pastor.
Hmm.
Someone in authority. That's kind of what I learned growing up.
What I hear in all of this is that your mom and this spiritual leader guy got together, and you know, kind of, and then you were born. And then, when she was pregnant, she got pulled into meetings, and they tried to work with her and chastise her and heal her and fix her. And what happened to him though?
I really don't know. I think they wanted her to put me up for adoption or something, or probably in kind of the name of counseling, you know, just weren't very helpful or honoring.
Right.
What I mean? And so, I don't hold them at fault really as much as I just, my biological father. I mean, really bad decision. But so my mom ends up leaving that church. And then goes to the church that my grandparents had founded, and which is a totally different vibe, right? So this one church, she could no longer be in the choir. She couldn't be a soloist. Not that she wanted to. They wouldn't even let her rehearse with the choir, which she wanted to rehearse with the choir because those were her friends. Those were the support that she had at church, and who wouldn't need to be supported at this time in their life more than ever?
Okay, I don't want to give it away how old you are, but.
Early 80s.
Okay, so this is back when Gary Chapman was doing cocaine and Amy Grant divorced him and Amy Grant got in trouble.
Yeah, I didn't know Amy Grant and Gary Chapman were married.
Yeah.
What? Oh, yeah, I had no idea. Probably, yeah.
It wasn't Gary Coleman, was it?
What you talking about?
Baby? I'm not sure.
Yeah. No, but this is back when people were chucking wobblies over things that were maybe lightening up a little bit more about these days. Do you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's go to the fact that your dad was living, what, 20 minutes away? And he didn't want to have anything to do with you? And so you had to hire like a PI? You had to hire Magnum to go find him?
Yes. So very early on in the pregnancy, my biological father basically didn't want to parent, like 3 months into the pregnancy. I mean, it was not going to happen. And my mom was fine with it. Like it was painful, obviously, but she never asked for child support or anything, and she just kind of said, well, I want my kid, and if you don't want her, okay, I still want her, and I'm going to have her. And so she never went to him for child support or anything, so he was completely absent, completely gone from our life. And then when I was 16 years old, I think I had grown a little curious. I think kids are always curious if they don't know one parent.
Sure.
Horrible parents. And so my mom had recently gotten married, and I was like, oh man, this is so weird. There's a man living in our house. Weird. Cause I had been raised just me and my mom. And so I was like, I don't like guys. Maybe. And I thought maybe I had some like resentment towards my biological father, and I really wanted brothers and sisters. And so I talked to my mom and my stepdad, and I said, please, what I would like to at least try to locate my biological father. So they hired a private investigator, and like 3 days later, they found him living 20 minutes away.
So when was the first meeting? Do you remember when you first went up and face-to-face this guy?
I do, absolutely. I wrote a letter, and then I think 6 weeks later I got a letter from him, and then soon after, I think it was the summer after, a couple months later, the summer I turned 16, I met him at a mall, because where else do teenage girls meet anyone?
Yeah.
So I met him at a mall with my mom, and it was a very unusual experience. I think for him, he had, from what it sounds like, from his story of it, he had kind of thought about this little girl, whoever this person was, for years. And as a child, I didn't think about him all the time. You know, I didn't hate the way I grew up. Certainly, it would have been cool to have a dad, but I used to always tell my mom, well, Jesus is my dad. But it would have been cool to have a dad, but it wasn't like an obsession or something that I thought about all the time.
But hold on, Susanna, by your own admission, you grew into daddy issues. Yes?
Oh, I think anyone that has any kind of absent parent or anything like that inevitably has some issues with that, because abandonment, a father not being there, I think it has huge emotional implications and huge spiritual implications. But it wasn't an obsession that I recognized.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, okay, so, but here's the thing. Because you don't seem judgy. You don't seem, like, I don't know you. I don't know you.
Yeah, no, I'm really not.
But how are you not? Because I was trying to poke at you a little bit and sure. Sort of go, ooh, those bad Christians, those bad mega church people, the, you know, spiritual men leader taking advantage of and sweeping issues under the carpet and stuff. But you're pretty chilled about this whole thing. How come?
I think because right off the bat, I learned that the character of God, you can't judge God by men, even men that claim Christianity or a certain spirituality. And I think life is incredibly hard and incredibly painful. And I think most of us make really bad decisions out of woundedness and fear and our own, you know, our own flaws and our own messed upness. So that's not a word. But I think what they were doing, and I think what the church often does, which is actually really counter to what I think Jesus calls us to do, is if something is messy or dirty or bad, we really run away from it and try to hide it.
Right.
And I think, gosh, I think that is so not what Jesus actually does or called us to. So I think I'm not sure exactly why I'm not judgmental about it, but I think I understand the motive wasn't malicious. The motive was flawed, and their actions were flawed, but I don't think it was malicious.
I want to just zero in on men in churches acting sort of inappropriately. And then what does the church do about it? And what the church does about this stuff is one thing. But I want you to empower, to infuse, to encourage women who are listening, who are part of a church. And you all know, or this lady knows, and other people from this church, they know that there's a couple of players floating in and around, and they sense something, or they've heard something, or it's happened to them, right? What happened to your mom is happening to them, and
absolutely. So I don't think the story is uncommon at all.
Right. So that's exactly, and I've heard many. I have heard many. So what do you say to these women? Like, leave the church. Don't give up on God. Give up on the church. Don't give up on God. Give up on.
Sure.
I don't know. What do you say to these women?
Sure. I think one thing is we get bad. You know, we at churches we talk a lot, but we don't always talk about the right thing. In my walk as a Christ follower, if I'm continuously living in a way that is not Christ-like and hurtful for other people, I want people to tell me, to talk to me about it. I actually, not because I'm big on everyone should be held accountable, blah, 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 let's get everyone in trouble, but because that's helpful to my relationship with God. Hmm. My biological father's life ended up becoming kind of a mess. And a lot of it stemmed from from his actions of abandoning a child when he knew he very well shouldn't have, and behaving in a way that he knew was consistently a lifestyle that was contradictory to what he claimed. Now, if people had come alongside of him then, even when my mom was pregnant, and said, let me show you how help us to help you live the way you know is aligns with the faith that you claim. That would have not only been helpful for me, but that would have been helpful for him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I want, you know, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. I mean, me getting into my whole first marriage, that would have been like a huge, I needed people to come alongside of me and be like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, but hold on. You would not have listened. I have met so many couples, they're in la la land, and I like one of them, and the other one's a dork or whatever, not cool. And I'll go up and say, yeah, are you sure? Are you? Oh yeah, yeah, he's the man for my plan. And that's how they talk. They talk in that same tone as well.
But I don't think it means that we shouldn't try. And I don't think it means that everyone. I don't think that a stranger should do it or someone I don't really know. But the people close to me that love me, I think that it can be helpful. For women that are in that situation, I think what my mom did so well with me is from being a little girl, pastors and the church didn't override my relationship with Jesus, and it didn't override my ability to question, to doubt, to fear, and to not believe. She really focused on believing in God and Jesus more than believing in the men or the women that were proclaiming the faith.
That's good. That's really healthy.
Yeah, so I could always question. Like, I didn't, until I was an adult, you know, and going to a women's Bible study, I kind of, and probably at Biola as well, I kind of assumed that's how everyone felt about their faith, that Christianity was this place of freedom and you could question and you could doubt and you could openly talk about God. And it was okay if certain days you didn't believe it, that all of that was part of faith, as opposed to kind of this concrete box of I believe, I believe, I believe, I believe all the time, and I'm going to feel it all the time, and and I'm going to be ashamed if I don't feel it, or if I don't believe it, or if I struggle with it.
Well, you're an anomaly in so many ways. I think you understand that about yourself. Kudos, as I start off the interview, to your mom, single mom.
Yeah, she was
single
awesome.
Moms, as far as I'm concerned, are the heroes of our generation. You think of business heroes or sports heroes or whatever, and I just go, that's not really a hero. So a real hero, as far as I'm concerned, is someone who was never designed to carry the load they are carrying, and that's a single mom.
And she was a special education teacher in a public school.
Ooh, I could have been one of her students.
I mean, she was, and she is to this day, she was just an amazing person. So it helped me because not once growing up either did she ever say anything bad about my biological father. And she did that not because she didn't feel negative things toward them, but she knew, and I think from her work she understood it as well, that children will identify with that parent. So anything, even if I didn't know him, there was this part of me that knew I came from him, whose DNA was inside of me, and she would not say anything bad about him because she didn't want that to affect how I felt about myself. Mm-hmm. And I think where it got really painful is once I met him and meeting him, and that journey, that would probably be the journey that where I really started to struggle with faith because of him being in my life and knowing him.
Wow. Well, that time just went and flew by. We have so much more to talk about, but we can't because we ran out of time. So Susanna Hicks Eldridge is a comedy writer. Today she writes most passionately about struggling with Jesus, faith, doubt, failure, and fear. You just summed up my life. Susanna with an H, Eldridge.com. Susanna, thank you for spilling some of your guts today, because these journey segments that I like to have on the show are really, just to summarize, about people who are living messy spirituality, you know, messy Christianity. It's sort of the stuff that a lot of us live, but very few of us admit. And as soon as you and I chatted on the phone, I loved your authenticity, and I wanted mm-hmm. I wanted people to hear some of your guts. So thanks, I appreciate it.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Susanna, we're going to put you on hold and then call a couple other crazy girls, and then we're going to get the three of you back for our pub crawl as we crack open a few topics. Three ladies in comedy talking about men, marriage, divorce, kids, dating, singleness, God, depression, and why women are not funny. Oh, I'm in so much trouble. Hang on, Susanna. We'll be right with you, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
Folks, a short break. When we come back, our final segment on the Drew Marshall Show, and Humble from Humble and Fred will chirp in whenever he's... He just gave me a little Shaniqua. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The other kind of pain. Everything.